Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Empowering Family Caregivers Show on Blog Talk Radio. I am Polly Whitehorn, your host for today's show, sponsored by eCareDiary.com. Today, we are going to focus on practical spirituality to overcome caregiving challenges. To help shed light on this, I am very pleased to introduce our distinguished guest, Dr. Coy Cross. He is a retired historian and author of the book, The Dance, A Caregiver's Search for Meaning. Dr. Cross has been a caregiver to his wife, Carol, who was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. He now conducts workshops and speaks about his journey of discovery, how he uses practical spirituality to deepen his relationship with the divine, and how to transform difficult challenges such as grief into incredible gifts. Well, Dr. Cross, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're more than welcome. I'm pleased to be able to talk with you and share some of my story with your guests, Polly.
That's
and
wonderful.
Please feel free to call me Coy.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Coy. First, let me ask you, what led you to write your book, The Dance, A Caregiver's Search for Meaning?
Okay. First of all, I would pronounce it The Dance. So if people are
the
looking
dance.
For it.
Okay.
Yes. And it is a rather involved story. I grew up in southeastern Kentucky in the hills, going to fundamentalist churches. But I was always a kid looking for answers and frankly not getting any that really satisfied me. And finally reached a place of just feeling so frustrated and so guilty that I spent several years, I would have described myself as an antagonistic agnostic. If you tried to talk to me about God or spiritual matters, I had a sharp tongue, and you would get probably a barbed response. And by the time I was about 40, then I started looking again. There's something really missing in my life. And I finally met this woman, female minister, Carol Ruth Knox, and for the first time in my life, I started hearing things that made sense to me. She talked about ideas like non-duality, like God being everywhere present, God being the only power in the universe, and God knowing everything that was going on in the universe. And these, to me, were new ideas. They're not really new, but they were new to me. And for the first time in my life, it made sense. And so she and I became dear friends. I served on her board, and it felt like every Sunday I came away with something new. Well, in 1985, I found myself in a situation trying to figure out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, so I went back to graduate school. And while I was in graduate school, Carol Ruth was killed. And her message had meant so much to me that I thought, okay, someday I'm going to write a book about her teachings and share that with other people. But after I got out of graduate school, I went to work as a historian for the Air Force. And it seemed like there was too much of a divide between writing about military operations during the day and coming home and writing it about spiritual teachings at night. So I gathered all the material that I could, and when I retired as an Air Force historian in 2007, then I began working on the book on Carol Ruth's teachings. 2 years into the project, my wife, also named Carol, was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And so it came to me, okay, if these teachings have any value at all, they will help me now. So the book changed to using Carol Ruth's teachings to help me deal with being a caregiver for my wife with cancer. So that's how I came to write the book.
Interesting. Now, can you explain the title and the spelling of the dance?
Okay. From the time that I thought about writing about Carol Ruth, I had the title right then. And Carol Ruth considered the way to live our life is as if we were in a dance with the divine. not feeling like we were leading, but we were in the dance with the divine leading our lives. Carol Ruth was from Massachusetts. So Carol Ruth was very careful to distinguish between dancing as recreational activity and using her beautiful Eastern accent in the dance, which was the dance with the divine. So that's where the title came from. And I like the spelling with the D-H-A-N-C-E because some of the teachings, the idea of non-duality is certainly a part of the Eastern teachings and not something that I grew up with. In fundamentalist churches, I grew up with the idea. I very clearly knew, I was very clearly trying to know what was the right thing to do and what was the wrong thing to do. And if God is really present in everything and God is the only presence and the only power, then there is no absolute right and wrong. So that's where the title came from. And if people read the book, and I would encourage you to do so, because I can go in much more detail in the book than obviously we can in a brief interview. But you'll also see that the dance has much more meaning than I was able to give you in just a couple of seconds there.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me, what tools did you use to discover within yourself that helped you with your wife in her time of need?
Well, part of the tools were in the background from Carol Ruth's teachings, and I'd been married before. I really had confronted a similar situation about 30 years before. When I was married before, my wife was in a serious auto accident and ended up with significant head injury and brain damage. And so I was a caregiver. In that time, I was a caregiver running a business, taking care of her full-time, and running a household with four school-aged children. And thinking, when I look back on it now, I think about the egotism involved. Men are not traditional caregivers. And so I felt like I can do this, and I can do this by myself. And what I found was within about a year, I was so spent and so exhausted physically and emotionally, I, for the one time in my life, seriously considered suicide. I was just absolutely overwhelmed. So when my wife, Carol, was diagnosed with cancer, first, I knew that I had to do this differently. And second, the key to me, or the key for me, was reaching a place of acceptance. And I, in preparation for the writing of the book about Carol Ruth's teachings, I'd also started reading some Buddhist and Eastern teachings too. And one of the people that I read that is, I highly recommend, is a fellow named Adyashanti. And one of his basic teachings is, I let everything be as it is. And this for me was absolutely huge, because the day after we met with the surgeons, my wife was a marriage and family therapist. She was spending the day calling clients and closing down her business. And I met with my friend Greg, and we sat and talked. And I told him then, okay, one, I know I have to do things differently this time. Two, I have to accept this is what is. I have to let everything be as it is. And what this did was free my mind to say, okay, what can I do? I knew I couldn't cure it. I knew I couldn't fix it. I simply had to accept it and then look, okay, in this situation, what can I do? I can get her the best medical care available. We did that. And the biggest thing that I could do was to remain consciously present with her. And I could only do this by coming to a place of acceptance. Okay, my wife has serious medical problems. She's got ovarian cancer. Her chances of survival are less, for 5 years, are less than 20%. I knew that. I couldn't change that part. What I could do was be consciously present with her. And she told me later, this is the best thing. This is exactly what I need from you. And I, my promise was, I will hold your hand and be consciously present with you throughout this whole process. And the third thing that was really critical for me is realizing, and God is in this too. God is here. God is present. And in truth, God is in charge. My job is to do the very best I can, being present with her, and how it turns out is out of my hands. And it sounds harsh, but what I told my friend Greg, how it turns out is none of my business. I certainly had a preference, but I was not in charge of how it turned out. I could only control my part in it and what I could do.
Interesting. Now, you talk in your book about practical spirituality. Can you share with our audience what you mean by that?
Well, I think it's just exactly what I shared right there. Seeing, I didn't feel abandoned by God. Carol didn't feel abandoned by God. What we could do, one, we certainly wanted a miracle to happen. And I started, everybody on my email list, everybody on her email list, we sent out a message and said, this is what's going on. I'm asking whatever faith, however you pray, however you recognize the divine, I ask that you call that into play and see the best results for her. And my promise was that I will keep you updated throughout the whole process. And so there are people around the world praying. And I think just knowing that people are holding her in their consciousness helped both of us. But we had both reached a stage where we wanted a miracle and we were willing to accept whatever comes to us. I think recognizing that, one, God is in charge, I'm not. God is here present, God knows what's going on, and releasing how it turns out. And I know people will find that hard to accept and hard to believe. Here's a woman that I absolutely adored, and coming to a place of realizing I'm not in charge. I'm not in charge. What I can do is work with myself. What she can do is work with herself, and not being focused on the results. Focus on being consciously present now. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, honestly, it freed my mind to be able to make much better decisions. Mm-hmm. I was not hung up in, oh my goodness, what did I do? One of the things that people can get hung up on is, what did I do to bring this to me? Even in some of the New Thought churches, it's the idea of, what did I do? What was in my consciousness to attract this to me? Mm-hmm. Or in some of the more fundamentalist churches, what did I do? Why is God upset with me to bring this on? And we never got to that place. That for me, why is the most useless question, because there's no answer. We can be the very best person in the world, and some things will not turn out the way that we want them to. Mm-hmm. I loved one of the things my friend Carol Ruth said. She says, we sometimes get the idea that if we do everything right, God will let us be in charge for a while. And that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. So practical Christianity for me is coming to a place of acceptance, realizing that God is in charge, that I'm not, and then doing the very best I can, with who I am and what my responsibilities are and what I can have some control over.
You talk about spirituality being such an important driving force here. And what do you have to say to those for whom faith is the one thing they can't hold on to during these tough situations?
Well, it's interesting. I was with a men's group last night, and faith was the subject. And I'm really sorry. I think we have to have faith and trust in something. And if we feel like God has let us down, what I'd suggest is we need a bigger picture of God. I don't see God as sitting around waiting for my call to suddenly come down and intercede in my personal life to make it better. I think, in truth, God is much bigger than that. I can't see all of what God is, but I have faith and trust that things in the big picture, I'm a very minute part of it, but in the big picture, things will work out for the best of everybody, for the best of, and when I'm saying everybody, I mean dogs, cats, the entire world. Mm-hmm. And in truth, part of my belief is if we keep destroying the planet that the way we are, we'll end up destroying ourselves, and the planet itself will be okay. And the planet will eventually come back, but probably come back without us. But, see, I see that as, well, that was our choice. Mm-hmm. So I see God on a much bigger plane, and have faith that things will turn out the way they're supposed to turn out. Mm-hmm. And that may not be the way that I want them to. Mm-hmm. And in truth, for people who are wondering, my precious wife, Carol, made her transition. She passed this past May. And I don't see that as God failing me. I see us as dealing with what life brought us and dealing with it in the very best way we could, mm-hmm. and staying present in the present to what life presented us.
Well, another thing you mention in your book is eliminating the labels of good and bad while caregiving. Could you talk a little bit about that concept?
Well, it goes back to this idea of non-duality. If God really is everywhere present, God is all-powerful, God is all-knowledge, then God clearly was present in Carol's cancer. Now, don't ask me to justify and say that was good. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was extremely painful. And here's someone that we loved each other, we're happily married for nearly 25 years, and suddenly I'm confronted with the probability of losing her, and she's confronted with the probability of not being here. But the thing is, when we label things as good or bad, what we tend to do is label everything having to do with that as good or bad. So the cancer, for example, if we had labeled it bad, then everything concerned with it would have been bad. And the truth is, there were moments and experiences in that were absolutely precious. We experienced, a greater connection with people than we ever had before. We saw more and more examples of just compassion and generosity and love around us. And between the two of us, we reached a level of love and acceptance. That period probably came closer to unconditional love between her and I than I've ever experienced in my life. And so if all we had focused on was how bad this was, we would have missed the very precious gifts that were included in that. And I'm not labeling it good either. It was extremely painful. It's one of the hardest things I've ever gone through in my life. And at the same time, just one example. After my wife passed, the doctor in charge of the intensive care unit called me about a week or 10 days later, and he said, "I just called to check to see how you were and to tell you what a privilege it was to serve your wife and be around you and your family." Now, this was... Everybody knows how busy ICUs tend to be. Mm-hmm. This is the doctor in charge. And we had that precious experience of being able to exude enough love around her with my family and friends around her that it affected the people who were working in ICU. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here recalling that, and tears are running down my cheeks. Oh. It was an absolutely incredible experience. And we were able to do that and experience that. And I think in large part because we didn't simply say, "Oh, my goodness, this is the worst thing. Why is God mad at us? What did we do? This is off." We didn't do that. We moved to a place of acceptance and says, "Okay, this is what is. Now, what can we do? Well, we'll get you the best care. We'll trust in the people that have been trained to take care of you, and then we'll accept however it turns out." So that's the experience for me of not labeling something just as good or evil. And you can look at the flip side. I know. Most of us have had experiences where we think something is really good or someone, "Oh, this is the right person for me," and we'll overlook red flags all over the place until it gets to the point where we can't overlook them anymore because we've labeled everything about this situation, everything about this job, everything about this other person coming into our life as good, and that can cause us to overlook some really obvious things that we should address and don't.
Now, let me ask you, time is precious for those deeply involved in caring for their aging or ailing loved ones. How important is it to take some time off and be in silence, as you say in the book?
Well, one of the things that struck me is being a caregiver. The analogy came to me, okay, if my wife was a craftsman, say a carpenter, or carpenter is probably the best one comes to mind, in her toolbox, she would have precious tools to help her do her job. In this case, my wife was a patient. She's working to heal. In that toolbox, I was the most precious tool in her toolbox because I was the one being with her, taking care of her. And I needed to look at myself that way. The ego was not involved this time as it had been in the past. And I knew if I'm going to be with her long term throughout this entire process, I have to be willing to accept help and to take some time. And for me, one of the most restorative practices is the idea of sitting in meditation, taking 20 minutes or taking a half an hour in the morning. The first thing when I got up, usually I was up before she was, I would get up and sit in the morning, and before I went to bed at night, I would sit again. And this helped keep me centered and help me stay focused and help to rejuvenate me enough that I could continue to be with her. And it got to the place where, again, my time is precious, and I realized there are certain things that I can hire people to do. Classic example, someone to clean the house. I could hire someone to come in. I didn't need to do that. What my job was to be with my wife and take care of her. So if I, some of the jobs I didn't need to do, if I could find a friend to do it or hire somebody to do it, my ego at this point subsided enough. I said, okay, that's what I will do. So I would encourage men especially, get out of your ego and realize this is bigger than you. This is more important than you. And you're going to need help doing this. So accept it and don't try to do everything yourself.
Great advice. Could you tell our audience where they could purchase your book?
There is a website. It's called thedance.com, thedhance.com. They can go to the publisher. It's Kono Pono Press, K-O-N-O. Second word is P-O-N-O, Press. Or you can go online to Barnes & Noble. You can go online to Amazon. And it's available through all of those. And I would encourage you to get a copy of the book. I feel like at this point my job is not selling books. My job is trying to help people who are confronting similar situations to my own. And the book is really a good way to do that.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you, Dr. Cross, or thank you, Coy. It has been such a pleasure having you as our guest and sharing your spiritual journey with us. Again, you can learn more about Dr. Cross by visiting his website, which is www.thedance.com, and that is thedhance.com. I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in today. Please join us next time on Tuesday, December the 11th, for our live online support group created by and for caregivers and moderated by Marjorie Pabst, eCare Diaries caregiving expert. Caregivers Speak airs live on the second Tuesday of every month at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is a program involving caregivers and expert physician Dr. John Guarneri, and they will be fielding questions about that are of interest to and from caregivers, and they are things that caregivers have always been afraid to ask. So you will certainly find lots of interesting information at this program. To learn more about eCare Diary and our upcoming shows, please visit www.ecarediary.com. Registration is free and gives you immediate access to your personal care diary tool. You can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My Twitter address is ecare_diary. Thank you again for joining us. Bye now.